Philippians 2. Rebecca and I were in Door County a couple weeks ago. And as we were up there, number one, people kept going, oh, you missed the pretty leaves and all that. It was a couple weeks past when all the leaves and everything's pretty. Like, there's no one up here. I go, I know, isn't it great? No one's up here. You didn't have to see anybody. So we were real popular when we went to stores. They're like, please spend some money. But anyway, as you drive up through Door County, you notice a number of wineries. We couldn't help but notice the wineries up there. There was one after another. I did a quick Google search, like, man, how many wineries can you have in one county? Door County is not overly populous. Obviously, a lot of tourists go, especially from Illinois. And there was 9 or 10 wineries that I counted being up in Door County. And why are there so many wineries up there? Because they have a certain fruit that they produce. What's the number one fruit they produce up there? Tangerines, as Pastor Brown said. Cherries. Oh, cherries. I thought it was tangerines. Here I was like, man, I was wrong. No, it's cherries, right? There's cherries everything. They have cherries, cherries, cherries. So they have cherries, so you see cherry wine. Now you may be asking, Pastor, did you have any of that wine? Absolutely not. But if I would have stopped every time it said free sample, I would have been drunk by the time I got to the tip of Door County. There was free samples everywhere. So I just couldn't help noticing it, and I was thinking, like, man, I didn't see any Baptist wineries. We're not going to have one here because we don't grow tangerines down in Oak Creek. We're Oak Creek. I'm all messed up. It's one of those days. I'm a little off kilter. But we're not going to have, you know, we won't actually have the vineyards over here and all that stuff. But, man, what if you put an H after the W? Do we ever have a Baptist winery even within our own church? Do you think we'd ever complain in our own church? A winery, playing words, clever. Do we ever wine in our own church? I don't, but other people do. And that's what we're going to preach about is you guys tonight. 1st, I need to confess lying because I said I never wine. Don't talk to my wife. But I was thinking about it. Here is some juice. This is 64 fluid ounces. This is apple juice. I was curious. I said, wow, you know, you take all those good cherries, you mash them up, you take the juice, and you put them into a container. And then people take all these good cherries, and what do they do with them? They spoil them. They rot them. There's about 2,000 orchards up in Door County. And I was like, man, could you imagine that? And I was like, I wonder. Now, I'm not drinking, guys. Stop looking at me like that. But I was wondering, how do you make booze out of this? How do you make booze out of this? I looked it up online, and there was one ingredient that you needed to have in order to make booze. Yeast. One little packet of yeast will turn this into booze. Now, yeast, we might, in a Bible sense, call it something else. What would we call it?
Leaven.
We had communion this morning, didn't we? And we had unleavened bread. And so the bread was very what? Flat. But if you enter this yeast into this drink, in 2 to 3 days, you'll have yourself some booze. Taking perfectly good juice and put in here. Man, is it good fruit that went into here? Apple juice? 100% juice? Man, I love apples. I love apples. I could eat apples all day long. Except if you go to the Elegant Farmer over there, I found out that there are too many apples to eat in one day because I felt guilty about just tossing an apple after I took a bite out of it. I didn't eat apples for a month. But the idea here is we love juice, don't we? Juice is sweet. Do you ever have to train a kid on how to drink juice? If I have to give it to a 4-year-old, is a kid going to fight back on drinking juice? Man, they love the sugar, don't they? It tastes good. But when you start adding this into it, you're turning the sugars into alcohol. It changes what it is. All of a sudden, that good fruit that was produced, that went into making this, becomes rotten. It becomes corrupt. Does it take a lot of yeast? Does it take a lot of leaven to make this alcohol? Not at all. It took a lot of good fruit to make this juice, and it only takes a little bit of leaven to make this corrupt. And so we're going to talk about murmuring and whining and complaining and doing things like that. So we're in Philippians chapter 2, and we're going to look in verse 12. says, "Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do his good pleasure. Do all things without murmuring and disputings, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. Yea, and if I be offered upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you always." So where do we get our fruit? We get our fruit from who? Do we earn our own fruit? The fruit is given to us, right? We get to see that the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5:22 and 23, in Ephesians 5:9, in James 3:17-18, we get that fruit from somewhere else. We get it from God, right? The fact that I'd have joy, love, peace, long-suffering, meekness, all those types of things, the reason I have that is because God has given it to me. Man, when you think about that fruit bearing, and you think about verse 12, we'll go to that in a second, but that tree, that's given from God. Boom, we're the branch, and on there you get the fruit, and we get those fruit, and it's really quite a wonderful thing, and we're going to talk about a couple of things that we do with fruit, but when it says, "Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." Now, is that working out your salvation, is that talking about my ability to get saved, that I have to work? No, it has absolutely nothing to do with my salvation in terms of me working to get saved. It has to deal with, hey, look, you're saved, now start working. Show that you're saved. Come on, let's get busy doing God's work. Then it says, "For it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do his good pleasure." In verse 12, Paul is telling the believers in Philippi to work out their salvation. Think about this. When it's time to harvest, are we supposed to do something with the fruit? There's something we're supposed to do with the fruit. There's a couple different things. One of my favorite things is if you go to an apple orchard or if you get some vegetables in the garden, it's vegetable or it's harvest time, you can start plucking out the fruit that's in there and start eating it, right? You can eat it raw. I love vegetable time. Man, my breakfast tastes much better with some fresh bell peppers, with some fresh kale, with some fresh tomatoes, with some fresh everything, right? Fresh is always the best. But that's not the only thing you can do with it. You can use the fruit for later. This right here is Aunt Susie's raspberry rhubarb jam. You may say, who is Aunt Susie? It's my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law makes some fine jelly. Was this fresh at one time? Sure, you can use that fruit a little bit later. You got to preserve it. You can preserve things a few different ways. You can cut it up and put it into a freezer, right? We have some peppers that are in the freezer we're going to use for later. You can put them into preserves and use them later. Do people can stuff for later? You might have tomato sauce. You might have all sorts of things. That's one thing you can do, is you can actually make some preserves with it. Or you can decide not to use it at all, and it's going to end up on the ground, and then the vermins are going to get it and all that sort of stuff. Or you can take that fruit that you've produced, and you can make some booze out of it. You can ruin the fruit that's been given to you, can't you? It's a dangerous thing, isn't it? This fruit's been given to you. Can you ruin what God has given you as a gift? Man. So, Philippi, there's a church there, isn't there? And in church are believers. The church is a bunch of believers. Did God give us a church? Yes. Are there believers in the church? Yes. So when we see verse 14, it says, "Do all things without murmuring and disputing." Man, we got this beautiful church right here. Does this church do a lot of good things during the year? Sure, absolutely. Ride for life, walk for life, everything for life. And we had the banquet here. We're going to have a Christmas banquet next month, and we're going to preach and try to reach the lost. We're going to have vacation Bible school. We're going to have the missionary offering was today. We got all sorts of things that we do that are good and right, don't we? Some pretty sweet juice. Some pretty sweet juice. But all things are to be done without murmuring and disputings. The word here for murmurings in the Greek is gagousmas. Now, it's kind of a goofy word, isn't it? You might be saying you're pronouncing it wrong. Yeah, but you don't know. Can I spell it? Sure, it's right there. I can spell anything, as long as it's on my paper. But that word is kind of like a word in English like a hiss or a buzz or a coo. It's onomatopoeic or poic or whatever. Now I screwed that one up. Now I'm for sure I made a mistake. But it's a word that is written out like it sounds, like a buzz or a hiss or a coo. And when you see that word murmurings here in the Greek and see your gagousmas, you're going, gagousmas, you can almost hear it. Is there a difference in whiny voice than when you're talking like a man? Have you ever, and my poor kids, my kids never complain, right, kids? My poor kids, I say, I don't speak whine. They have to speak English to me. So-and-so did this, so-and-so did that, so-and-so did this. Murmuring. Is that different? Can you almost hear it? It's like fingers on a chalkboard, the nails on the chalkboard. I don't want to. Do we ever do that in a church? How come I didn't get to be the second assistant teacher in Vacation Bible School? I always want to be the second. How come Pastor Brown didn't shake my hand on Sunday morning? Got goosebumps. You can hear it, right? You can just hear the sound. You can hear the murmurings. And when you do that, man, do you want to respond in a positive way? Do you love it when someone comes to you and whines? Now, is that the same? For example, Brian comes up here, and he asked for a prayer request. He said he's been trying to sell his trailer. I have no idea how long he's been trying to sell his trailer. Let's say for a month. And he puts on Craigslist he wants to sell this trailer, and it doesn't sell. He could go to God one of two ways. He can go to God like, God, it'd really be nice if you could sell my trailer. I could really use the money. I'd really appreciate it. But your will be done. Or he can go, God, why haven't you sold my trailer? You never sell my trailer. Is there a difference? There's absolutely a difference. It's when you have your employee come to you and he goes, I don't make as much money as so-and-so. Or, I really believe that based on my merit as an employee that I believe I've earned a higher wage. Would you consider doing that? Is there a difference? Is the boss going to listen to more one person than the other? There's a difference in how you say it. And so when we say murmurings, that's what we're getting at. It's more of a, like when you hear a coo or a goo. You guys can use that if you want. The children of Israel, did they ever murmur? Oh, man. I can't prove that I'm Jewish, but sometimes my murmuring, I think I am. They're running from the Pharaoh and his armies. They get across. Woohoo! Look, the armies of Pharaoh have been destroyed in the Red Sea. They're done. Woohoo! And they just praise God for the next 40 years, right? Man, I think it's by like 2 minutes after they're out, they're like, we're thirsty. Give me something to drink. We're hungry. Give us something to eat. And eventually, by the time Numbers comes around, Book of Numbers here, we're hungry. Give us something to eat. He goes, you're hungry? I'll give you something to eat. Here's a bunch of quail. See how much you can eat. There's a difference between murmuring and asking God for help, isn't there? Help me out, God. I don't have enough money in the bank account. You're going to have to figure it out. Or, why didn't you put enough money in the bank account? God's got your back, doesn't he? He wants to help you. He's on your side. He's provided for you so far. Do you think he's going to continue to provide for you in the future? Absolutely. Of course he is. He's God. He can do all things. Disputings. The word here, the Greek underlying word, is the word where we get dialogue from. Dialogue. Although, do you get the idea here that this is a dialogue when it's disputings? I almost get the idea it's more like, I'm looking to pick a fight in the church. Do you know who I am? I am second assistant in the Vacation Bible School. I tell Sophia Longsign what to do. She is in fear and trembling of me. And then you kind of start beating your chest. When we're in church, there's some people looking to pick fights, aren't there? Man, Is that the wrong attitude? Yes. All things without murmuring and disputing. This isn't about giving ourselves bloody noses. Listen to this. One of my deepest convictions is that the terrible harms that are done in this world are not done by deliberately evil people who are not numerous and soon found out. They are done by the good, by those who are so sure that God is with them. Nothing can stop them, for they are certain they are right. And when they think they're always right, they're going to look to pick fights with other people. You do not step on your toes. Do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? I'm Pastor Longsign. Do you know who I am to God? Jared Longsign. Is God a respecter of persons? No, he wants me to live a life that's glorying to him, not glorying to me. This isn't my territory. This is God's territory. I'm to have a heart for people. Do we have honest disagreements among one another? Absolutely we do. But when we're constantly looking to pick fights, there's a problem there. So we want to talk about yeast in the juice. This is yeast in the juice to God, isn't it? The murmurings and disputings, they enter this and they change it, don't they? Man, can just a little bit of murmuring and disputing do a lot of damage to our Christian walk? Can it do a lot to damage this church? How much? It makes me nervous. So when I'm saying this, I'm not picking on you. I'm picking on me a little bit. It makes me nervous to think about the people I've turned away from Christ because they've seen me be a whiner about my own church, or they've seen me be a whiner about my own employer. They've seen me be a whiner. I'm a Christian. I am above that. Man, I have a God to pray to. I have a God to make requests to. And when we get to this point where it's, why is it always happening to me? Do you think lost people see that? They sure do. Do you know it only takes 1 gram of yeast to contaminate this? And right here is about, I don't know, 1,000 or 2,000 grams, right? I mean, this is just a little bit. This is significantly heavier than this. It doesn't take much. You know how many apples it takes to get this amount of juice? About 10 pounds. It takes a lot of fruit to get ruined by a little bit of sin, doesn't it? We got a good thing going here at First Baptist Church. It's not guaranteed to go on forever. One slip up. Have you ever known a pastor who's made a mistake? And you hear that name, and what do you think? You think of them and the church. Would you send your kids there? Man, that pastor there, he was such a dog, I'd never send my people there. Man, one mistake makes such a big difference. All the good things can be churned. But the beautiful fruit is rotted. All is waste. It makes you think of the idiom, one bad apple spoils the bunch. It only takes a little bit of sin to make a terrible impact on the effectiveness. Turn to 1 Corinthians 5, 4 through 8. 1 Corinthians 5, 4 through 8. It says, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, when ye are gathered together in my spirit, and with the power of our Lord Jesus Christ to deliver such a one unto Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that the spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus, your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. That leaven makes a difference to God. If I was to take this cup of water and just have one little spit in here, I'd go, would you want to drink out of it? In fact, who'd want to, I shouldn't even ask, there's someone out there who'd probably do it, but who'd want to drink out of the water I've been drinking out of? Nobody. You got a guest coming over to your house, you go, you thirsty? The guy goes, yeah, okay, here, you want something? You get him a fresh cup, don't you? You want the cup to be untainted. And I have cooties, so you definitely don't want mine. But a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And so God gives a command here. God says what? That ye may be a new lump. I want you to be a new lump. That's a good title of a message. Be a new lump. Should you be a new lump? Man, be a new lump. How do we get there? How do we do it? And the reason why we're to be a new lump is because neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness. Think about that malice that has it. You get that same idea when you use the term malice and wickedness with murmurings and disputings. And malice. It's just when you look at somebody, you don't like them. When you hear their name, it raises your blood pressure up a couple points. The temperature raises. You get sweat on your forehead. Like, I don't want to talk to them. I don't have anything to deal with them. To purge out, that word means to scrub out thoroughly. It means to clean, clean, clean. There's a sense of vigor and attention to the matter that must be considered. We are to remove all of the infection and then replacing it with what's good and acceptable. We need to be new lumps that we would be without malice and wickedness. Let's go back to our text. In verse 15, it says, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world. Because sometimes when you read a verse, you almost think it was written in 2014. Man, are we in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation? Does it seem godlier now than it did 20, 30, 40 years ago? I wouldn't know about 40 years ago, but I'm getting closer. I haven't had the senior citizen discount yet, but it's coming. And so there is a cost that's associated with murmuring and disputings. Does it cost you something? Does it cost you something to murmur and dispute? You bet it does. Let's look at some central themes here. The Bible states that we are to be blameless and harmless. And the reason is that when we murmur and when we have disputings, it affects more than just us. It affects those that are around us, you know, and those that we have relationships with. When we murmur with God, what are we doing? We're telling God that we're not getting what you believe is owed to you. You're telling God you're not getting what's due to you, what's owed to you. Think about that quail that I talked about in the book of Numbers. I'm not getting good enough food. Have you ever wished you had a better car? Have you ever wished you might have had a bigger house? Have you ever wished? And then you go, God, why can't you just do it for me? I just want to. Is it wrong to ask God for a nicer car? No. God, give me a nice vehicle. It'd be really nice. Is there something wrong with complaining about the one you have? Yes. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Family. You ever go home and serve some roast pastor? Did you hear what pastor said today? You know what Pastor Brown said today? And Pastor Brown's probably been flayed so many times he doesn't know what to do. He's probably got scars all over him. Oh man, it's Thanksgiving time. Let's really talk about the pastor. It's going to be a good one. We have to be careful what we say about other folks at church in front of our kids and in front of our other relatives. Do you think your kids are going to pick up whether or not you like your church or not? I'm obligated to be here, but let me tell my kids how I really feel about. And I'm not going to let my kids hide from my wrath. And then they turn 18 and they're going, you think I really want to go to the same church you're going to? I've heard you complain about it for 18 years. Do you think I'm going to stick around now? They're going to be gone, aren't they? They're going to go to some other church they didn't hear all the complaining about, but there's still a lot of problems there at the new church, isn't there? Be careful what you say in front of your kids, because remember, it only takes a little leaven to leaven the whole lump, doesn't it? It only takes a little bit of yeast to ruin this whole container of drink. And when you think about all the good things that your church does, are you going to go home and tell your kids, man, do you know how much we had for a missionary offering? Isn't it awesome, kids, that we had this much for the missionary offering? Isn't it awesome what we did for the birthday for Jesus? Isn't it great for Vacation Bible School? How many times have you told your kids how wonderful your church is? How many times have you told your family and friends how wonderful your church is? Or are you more content with saying how terrible your church is? Are there some things to criticize about our church? I'm sure there is. I know the assistant pastor, and I know there's a lot of criticism that could be due to him. But the idea is, remember the things that your church does well. And also brag on those things. Brag on the Lord. Tell people how wonderful God is and what he does at this church. Is God working here? Is God working here? Yes. I sure hope he is. And if not, you better get on your knees and pray about it, because he probably wants you to do something about it. When you complain, your family may not realize the damage that you're doing. Your church. What about your church? Your church is or those in... Excuse me. Your church. When you complain in church, this may lead to those in the church being turned off by your church. Who here has been here the same amount of time since the beginning of the church? Nobody. Who here has been here less than a year? Anyone here less than a year? Reagan, you've been here more than a year. It just feels, time flies when you're having fun though, right, Reagan? Hey, some people have been here 5 years. Some people have been here 10 years. Some people have been here 20. Brian Guthrie knows where more bodies are buried than I do. Hopefully not literally. I don't know if there's any real bodies. Does he have more ammunition to tell me about how bad this church is than I do? Sure, if you wanted to. Do sometimes we get a little free with our tongues and tell people about how rotten our own church is? Man, we got problems. I know we do. But be careful. You don't know how your lips can affect other people wanting to go to this church. We're dysfunctional, but we like friends. Let's all be dysfunctional together. But the idea is, look, we are a family. We don't do everything perfect. What church member here is above criticism? But remember, a lot of us provide a lot of fruit because God's been giving us a lot of fruit and we do a lot of good things. It's easy to pick out the bad stuff, but our object is not to sit and to pick apart everything that goes wrong in our church or everything that's bad in the church. We're supposed to lift each other up. Would your friends want to come here to go to church based on what you say about your church to them? In the world, your griping will inevitably be a poor witness to the world. Specific to the verse at hand, we must consider how bright we shine to the world. We must be above reproach. We must be above reproach. And we must be approachable. You know, look at that verse when it says, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation among whom ye shine as lights in the world. How many good Baptist churches are there in Wisconsin? I think the number I heard, at least at the King James Bible, I was going to get an answer, I think, from someone. I was at the King James Bible Conference, and someone said they send about 200 out. There's about 200 Baptist churches of our ilk. Is that a lot? We have about 5.5 million people in the state. Is 200 too many Baptist churches? Does our country suffer from too many good Baptist churches? Man, there's too many Baptist churches in the Milwaukee County area. I know, there's just too many. It's hard to pick a good one, isn't there? We need to make sure that when we're out in the world, I know we got problems. I know that every church has a problem, but we got a lost and dying world, and when they see us fighting, when they see us bickering, when they see us going headlong at each other, and we call ourselves a Christian, that's a problem. I just recently had a fella tell me he'll never work for a Christian company again because he saw the sorry excuse they were as a Christian testimony. Pastor Brown is right this morning when he says we're all witnesses, aren't we? We're all testimonies. We're either a good testimony or a bad testimony, aren't we? And we have a nation that's already messed up. It's crooked and perverse. We have an opportunity to shine. But when we murmur and we dispute, we take away from that, don't we? We take away from that. Not only is murmuring, disputings damaging to the immediate, and by immediate I mean immediate offense, added stress, lack of trust, avoidance, and others, it's also damaging in the long term. When you display an attitude on a consistent basis, you minimize the ability to be honest. You minimize the ability to have a heartfelt conversation. If someone is always whining to you, or if you're the one always doing the whining, do you think people really want to have a conversation with you? Do you see the phone number? Pastor Brown probably has about 15 numbers. When his phone starts ringing, he goes, uh-oh, here we go. Not him, me. When he sees the number, he's like, this is going to be a whining. They're going to whine about something. They're going to whine about something. I see the email from him. I know they're going to whine. Here we go. Hello? I can hear it from my office, actually. I can actually hear the whine. It permeates. You should hear the ringtone he has. No, I'm just kidding. He doesn't have a ringtone for... the Imperial March or something. Anyway. When people see you coming, do they just cringe? Oh, here he is again. What's he going to say? He's not going to like the color of my shirt. He's not going to like the color of my shoes. He's not going to like the way he's saying. He's not going to like the, you're bracing yourself. Like, you got to do the breathing exercises. You got to think about it. Do I have enough energy to talk to this person? Ignore. Can you have a real conversation with people like that? Never. I mean, can God do a work in their lives? Sure. But you're not going to really lay out your heart with somebody, because you know that the moment you give them your heart, they're going to go, I don't like your idea. It's a bad idea. That idea isn't as good as the other idea. I don't like the way you taught this. I don't like that. I'd rather just keep it to myself than get into a conversation like that. And when we have that murmuring, when we have that disputing in our lives, man, I don't want to deal with that. You know, on a much less important issue, anyone have anyone who thinks different than them in politics within their own family? Christmas can be interesting. I don't talk about Scott Walker in front of my family because my brother does not like Scott Walker at all. So I just like, Scott Walker, the election happened. We talked about the election, but somehow we avoided the names Murray Burke and Scott Walker altogether. Oh, there was an election on Tuesday. Yes, there was. Because I didn't want to hear, I don't like Scott Walker. And I didn't want to have to say, I'm so glad I don't have to listen to Murray Burke for 4 years. But we avoid certain conversations, don't we, when someone's whiny. We avoid those conversations when all you get is murmuring. We avoid the person. Oh, they're so-and-so. They see me. Did they make eye contact? I hope they didn't make eye contact. I got to escape here. How do I escape? I'm going to hide behind the pulpit before they get me. What are you doing behind the pulpit? Oh, just cleaning behind the pulpit on Tuesday morning. We run from people like that. We run from them because we don't have to deal with it. It makes a difference. This is from a book called The Management of the Tongue, written in 1814. So it's old enough, so it's good. I never contend with anybody about frivolous and trifling things, for I have often observed that a mere trifle will deprive man of the pleasure and advantage of conversation because it makes them hot and keeps them from discoursing of more useful and more necessary things. Disputing will make some indifferent things very considerable by their consequences. It makes a difference when we're disputers all the time. It makes a difference if we whine all the time. Is it okay to whine once in a while? Well, in the Bible it says you're supposed to avoid all murmurings and disputings. Is that a tough target to hit? Absolutely. That's why it's a Bible standard. And there's some things that are hard to hit, but we need to strive for them. Unfortunately, we do miss out on an opportunity to do more in life because we're protecting whatever kingdoms we've set up in our minds. Don't be a person, or don't be people who avoid you avoid because they know that you're going to complain. Look at verses 15 once again. It says that they may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation. We've read that. Among whom ye shine as lights in the world. Verse 16, holding forth the word of life that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. Yea, and if I be offered up upon a sacrifice in service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all. Expectations, we are to be, this is what we're to be. In verse 15, blameless, harmless, and without rebuke. And just think about that is supposed to be all the time. Are we under pressure? When do you complain? When you're in a good mood? These nachos aren't as good as I was thinking. The Packers are up by 50 points, but I don't care. I don't like the nachos. You could start complaining when you're under pressure, don't you? Man, I mean, you complain when something's not going right in your life. Under pressure or having a bad day is not the excuse for complaining. Shine as a light in the world. In the Bible, in Matthew 5:16, it says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. That's our responsibility as Christians, isn't it? To let our light so shine. We are to shine for these people. Not have a layer of grime on it. Not to be filthy, but we're supposed to be bright. We're supposed to be clean. We're supposed to be going out in the world. We are joint heirs with Christ. We are to be clean. We are to live holy lives, and we're supposed to do our best to glorify and please Him, aren't we? And this is holding forth the word of life. In common with English, to hold up or on, meaning to hold back in the sense to retain, not to lose, persevering in acknowledgement and practice of the Christian doctrine. We're supposed to take the whole Christian doctrine, right? What part of the Bible shouldn't we preach on? We should preach on the whole thing, shouldn't we? What part of Christian doctrine shouldn't we live? Should we rejoice? Always. And then again, I say rejoice, right? We're supposed to rejoice all the time. In this world, you should have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I've overcome the world, right? We've overcome, he's overcome the world. We're supposed to rejoice all the time. We're supposed to be, does that mean we're always happy? No, but I know that this is the day the Lord hath made. We shall rejoice and be glad in it. And usually I have to remind myself of that when I'm having a bad day. Maybe it's just me. Here's how you maintain those expectations. Go to Philippians 1. It should be just across the page or a page back. Philippians 1. This is how you maintain these expectations. In verse 9. In this I pray, that your love may abound, yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment, that ye may approve things that are excellent, and that ye may be sincere without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness which are by Jesus Christ, unto the glory and praise of God. In verse 9, we're supposed to have love that abounds and abounds more as time goes by, and love that grows in biblical knowledge and biblical discernment. So to show thyself approved, right? A workman that needeth not to be ashamed. We're supposed to grow. The more we know about the Bible, we're supposed to love people more, aren't we? Not less. Is it hard to love people? Yes, that's why we need the Holy Spirit to help us. It's not easy to love people. It's hard to love people. Ask my wife. She loves me, and it's very hard. It took a very special woman. I didn't hear any amens, so maybe it's not true. Maybe I'm that. No, it's tough to love people. We're very tough. We're very difficult. I love what a pastor said this morning. He said, man, we all have our idiosyncrasies, don't we? We all got our weird thing that we do. And, so, and I don't know what mine is, but I'm sure you guys do. And it's a real rough go. People are rough, but we're commanded to love them, aren't we? We're supposed to love your neighbor. And when we see that our life changes, it's not just supposed to love, but it's supposed to abound, that it may abound yet more and more in knowledge. Does your love abound? In verse 10, we're supposed to prove things that are excellent, the ability to test those things which differ, to have the understanding biblically to tell if something is sin or preference, and to be able to focus on the big picture. So we're saying, all right, there's no murmurings and no disputings. Does that mean if there's sin in the church, we shouldn't say anything? No, let's say something about sin, right? Let's hate the things that God hates. Let's voice up when we see a problem. When we see sin, let's deal with it. We're supposed to approve those things. We're supposed to test them. We're supposed to look at them to see if they're excellent, to see if they're actually worth it. We're supposed to have an understanding of the Bible. A biblically illiterate congregation is no good. We need people who understand the Bible, who have their nose in the Bible. Well, I know some Christians who read their Bible every day and they're grumpy. Man, well, they need to start reading Philippians 4. We need to have a better understanding of the Bible, because when we have a better understanding, we have an ability to properly discern, don't we? Being able to discern what's right or wrong, is that just a preference, or is that what the Bible calls sin? The Bible says, judge not. The only person who says that is someone who doesn't understand the rest of the chapter, right? To be sincere and without offense until Christ comes back in verse 10. So you may approve the things which are excellent, that ye may be sincere and without offense. Sincere and without offense. Is sincerity a hard thing? Are some people naturally happier than others? Sure. Does that mean that joy is only for those who are happy-go-lucky people? Joy is a fruit of the Spirit. It is given to you. You don't always have to be a smiley person. In fact, some of the most joyful people I've met are not gregarious. They're not overly flamboyant. Oh, I shouldn't use the word flamboyant today. I think it's been hijacked. But we can be happy people and not have joy. But to be joyful, and we're supposed to do it with sincerity. Should we expect everyone to act the same? No. However, we can have a sincerity about ourselves that when people know that when you talk to them, that you're a sincere person. And you can do it without offense till the day of Christ. In verse 11, being filled with the fruits of righteousness. That's a tough one. Because I can't control all that, can I? I can't control the crops, can I? But the fruits do come, the more I submit to Christ. But is it a lot of hard work? Farmers are some of the hardest working guys I've ever met. It takes a lot of work to have a good crop. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes you keeping your nose down and doing the right thing. The fruits of righteousness don't come by playing video games till 4 in the morning, do they? Man, I was playing Halo 15 and God spoke to me at 3 in the morning. He says I should pray. When you're in the world and you're doing the world's work all the time, that affects your ability to produce the fruit, right? A farmer needs to be out pruning his trees and taking care of a vineyard and taking care of these things. You know, when God blesses you with that, does the farmer have 100% control of what crop he's going to get for the year? No, but you need to make sure that you're working so God can give you abundantly, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ. So let's talk about being filled with the fruits for a moment. When I talk, here's a couple questions you can ask yourself. See if maybe you're filled with the fruits of righteousness. When I talk to people, do they leave me encouraged or discouraged after talking to me? Do you encourage people when they talk to you, or do you discourage them? Like they walk away like, oh man, that's 5 minutes I'll never get back. One of my bosses had a sign on his door. He says, everyone brings joy when they come, or when they're in my office, some when they come and some when they leave. But do you encourage or discourage people? Here's another way to tell if you have some of the fruits of the righteousness in terms of complaining. Do you have friends that like to complain? You find what level of water you are, don't you? You level that right out. Do you have friends that like to complain? And then, do you look for opportunities to dispute with one another? I'm going to find him today. It's been church, it's 12:15, and I haven't picked a fight yet. Let me find somebody. You go find a 4-year-old to push over or something. I mean, are you looking for people to fight with? These are just some of the ways we can test it out. There's many others, but for time's sake, I'm going to wrap up. There are times when you are not the one that brings up murmuring or disputing. With that state, it's important to deal with it best you can. When you get into an accident, a car accident in Wisconsin, they don't generally just blame one person. You get a percentage of the blame. So if someone disputes with me, is it all the other person's fault? Do you think maybe I contributed something to it? What if it's only 10% your fault and 90% their fault? Do I need to have them make it right with me, or do I need to make right the 10% that I had fault in? I need to make it right, don't I? I'm not going to apologize to that person. Does that person know who I am? I am me. Well, go apologize to them. If they're more at fault than you, so be it. That's on them. But you have to learn that you have to take responsibility for when you are in disputes and when you are murmuring. It's not everyone else's fault. Sometimes it's your fault. Lastly, out west, a cowboy was driving down a dirt road, his dog riding in the back of a pickup truck, his faithful horse and a trailer behind. He failed to negotiate a curve and had a terrible accident. Sometime later, a highway patrolman came. He was an animal lover, but he saw the horse was in a great deal of pain. He went up to the horse. He knew it wasn't going to survive, and he takes out his firearm and shoots the horse. He walks up to the dog, and he sees the dog's in pain, and he goes up to the dog and shoots the dog. It was a very sad, sad scene, and the gun was still smoking. And he located the cowboy who had suffered multiple fractures. Off in the weeds, he'd rolled off the road. He says, hey, are you okay? And the cowboy looked at that smoking revolver in the troop's hand and quickly replied, never felt better. I don't know if that's a true story or not, but hey, we got a good thing going on here, don't we? Amen. We got a good church here. We got good folks here. We got good ministries going on here. We got a good senior pastor. We got good people playing pianos and singing in the choir. We got good people all over. Let's not ruin the juice by putting in some of this. Let's learn what sin is. Let's learn what preferences are. And when we get into a dispute, don't be so prideful to say, I'm never going to say I'm sorry. Just say you're sorry. What if it's not all your fault? You can't control that. You only can control yourself. Don't add the leaven to the juice.